Hey everybody, how you doing? Welcome to the Cripes Cast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and I am looking out onto, I would say, what is traditionally an October day in Wisconsin. It's gloomier than hell, ladies and gentlemen. What is going on? It's kind of like one of those weird fall days where it's cold out, and I'm looking at this tree, which hasn't even started to change. This tree is still holding on to summer, like your professor who is dyeing his hair into his mid-80s. Look at this thing. It's not even beginning to change colors. I don't know where this tree's getting the green dye from, but it's about that time. It's about that time to just admit what's happening. That's a weird way to start the podcast. By the way, my guest today is Drew Lynch. He's a hilarious comedian. He's got a new stand-up special out called Concussed. You can find it on YouTube. Just check out the Drew Lynch YouTube page. But you may remember Drew from doing America's Got Talent in 2015. He had developed a stutter at the age of 20 after an accident during a softball game. And, he was acting before that. And then obviously developed this stutter that was complicated when it, came to acting. And so he turned to stand-up. And, he's just become an amazing stand-up comedian because of this. So very interesting conversation with him. Honestly, we went far beyond that aspect of his life and just into, kind of what it means to be a content creator or comedian in the world today, just with all the social media and all that sort of stuff. So I think you'll really enjoy my conversation with him. So anyway, back to this tree. The last time I was living in LA, I was doing, as a job, I was doing red carpet reporting. And you would see on these red carpets, everyone had Botox and all that sort of stuff. And you're like, why does everybody do Botox here? Why doesn't anybody do that in Wisconsin? And I think the reason is, and this relates to the tree, there aren't seasons out in LA, So it's 75 and sunny all the time. And here it's not. Seasons change, which reminds you time passes. LA doesn't have that. So you could be out there, 10 years go by, and because the weather never changes, you don't know it. I mean, it's funny how that works. But and then 10 years go by, and that's why people get the Botox, because they think 2 weeks has gone by, and they're like, I want to live forever. Meanwhile, in the Midwest, we're all like, yeah, I hope I'm dead before February. Honest to Pete. That's a good thought, Charlie. It's good that you can laugh at your own jokes. Speaking of jokes, I just want to thank everybody who came out to Des Moines and to Omaha last weekend. Had a couple great shows, filled the places. I'm just so grateful all of you came out. This week we've got Chicago coming up and Fish Creek in Wisconsin. And so Chicago, there are still tickets available. Fish Creek is sold out. So if you're in and around the Chicago area, come on out. It's going to be a good show. We got the Bears playing the Packers this weekend, ladies and gentlemen. And geez Louise, who saw that Packers game? Holy smokes. How many missed field goals? I had a whole car ride to think about a bit for the number of missed field goals, but I don't really think I ever thought of a good one. Not one that was beaten by what's already been posted on Twitter. But I think it's an indicator of, honestly, it's an analogy for life. Okay, and I'm putting these pieces together in real time. So if it's not a perfect analogy, just go with me. It doesn't matter how many field goals you miss. Actually, this is kind of like the Rodgers thing I was saying from a couple weeks ago. Rodgers missed a few passes, but it didn't matter because at the end of the game, he got it done in the same way. Mason Crosby missed three field goals and I think an extra point. And that would have been the headline, but he kept his head in the game and he finally punched that field goal through. And, that right there is the life lesson. Ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't matter how many times you go ass over tea kettle, but if you just keep tumbling, and you just keep you keep your head in the game, you keep tumbling, you just might end up through the uprights there. Poetry, Charlie, really good. So, all right, so that's good. So, by the way, we got a few housekeeping items. I just want to let you know we got a sweatshirt and koozie deal. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. This actually, my mom came up with this deal. All those of you who don't know my mom, she goes by Molly, but that's mother to me. Here's what she says. She says, she does all the merch and all the promotions, and she's really amazing with it. But I just want to read this for all of you, ladies and gentlemen. Get cozy and get a koozie. That's great copy. See, this is where I get it from. The deal starts October 13th. It goes through October 31st while supplies last. Works for all sweatshirts and corresponding koozies, hoodies, and crewnecks alike. So there you got it. You want a sweatshirt? You want to stay warm on the outside? You want a koozie? You want to stay warm on the inside? This is the deal for you, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, you can get tickets to the live shows, the one in Chicago, or the sweatshirt plus koozie deal. You can get it all at cripescast.com. Also, a quick reminder, I've got a book coming out. If you're new to the podcast, I just wrote a book. If you're not new to the podcast, you're like, will you shut up about the book, Charlie? Jeez Louise, we get it. We already bought it. And I thank you for buying it. But anyone who hasn't, it's called The Midwest Survival Guide. It's a great book to get for anyone moving to the Midwest, or if you've been here a long time. Plenty of jokes, plenty of anecdotes from my life growing up. I think it's pretty funny. I might be biased, though. My mom says it's good, so that's got to go for something. My dad, not so much. You know, he says it's okay. Dick Behrens. Did he write a book? Yes, he wrote a book. How is it? He wrote a book. I'm just kidding. My dad hasn't read it. All right. And you can, of course, follow the Cripescast on all platforms. That's at Cripescast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Also, folks, I want to thank everybody who's rated the podcast and left a comment. Those help so much. They help direct this podcast. And if you share it with your friends, that just helps us grow. And I can't thank you enough for doing it. So, yeah, there you have it. Okay. Well, I think that's all I had to say here. Now it is time for my conversation with the very funny Drew Lynch.
I love your studio.
Thanks, dude. I really appreciate that. Here's the problem with it. So I started it to do like two people, right? So I got the main thing right there. Yeah. And then, but if I sit here, it's like not symmetrical. And then the lighting's okay. That. So I got to redo it. But it's very kind of you to say.
Yeah, it looks good. But wait, what happened to the other person? Is that not a thing anymore?
Well, it was going to be like, oh, we'll invite people to the studio, right? So there's two chairs and then two people. But then COVID happened.
And then
also I'm in Milwaukee. I can't really get that many people in person anywhere. So
let's be realistic about location, man. Let's be realistic here.
Yeah. I like your studio.
Thank you, man. We got so many sound panels, too many. You know what? I got sound panels. Bro, I got sound panels on the ceiling. I never use anything over here, and I have it on the ceiling.
Who did your sound? First of all, the paneling behind you looks like Psychedelic Checkers. I don't think it's a good look. And then who soundproofed it?
My assistant and me and my fiance. It was a group effort.
That was nice. So who did the YouTubing, the Googling for how to soundproof?
The YouTube.
It was you. Yeah. Yeah.
That was my job. I looked it up and was like, here's the video, and I could share the URL. I could text the URL to you, but I'm going to go do shows. And then they were like, what? As much effort as I put into the studio, and it has not made sense for how much work was put into it. So it was like the eyes were kind of bigger than the stomach kind of situation. I think podcasting is a lot of fun, but the spirit of this studio was built because everybody had a podcast. So I was like, oh, I need the podcast in a studio. And it didn't really sustain. So,
yeah, that's, I kind of get to that point every now and again, cause I kind of got a podcast I like talking to people and all that, but I also felt the pressure of like everyone else has one. Why shouldn't I have one? But you just said, forget about it.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing is I think it's a lot of work to put together, as you know, it's a lot of work to put guests together to like line it up and make schedules happen. And then I also found that every time I do somebody's podcast, I usually end up making a better host than they do. And that's not like a brag. I just mean like I'm really good at asking questions. I'm not good at answering questions about myself, but I'm really curious. And I think I like to hear other people talk, not so much me. But I'm so glad that you have me on.
I can't wait for you to judge my questions and tell, and on a future podcast, tell someone how much better you were at asking him. I mean, I'll be truthful with you. You're probably right. So I'm just going to set the bar low right here. And also, when you brought up the scheduling, I was like, oh, because I messed up the scheduling on this. So thanks for your flexibility on that, by the way.
No, I just know how difficult it can be, especially when you're working on other stuff. Like when you got other content that you have to generate on top of if you're touring or doing, it's like, it's just a lot. I mean, the podcast is like such a back burner thing, it feels like, but for a lot of comics and creators, sometimes that's their bread and butter. Sometimes that's how people find people is through podcasts, which is bizarre. But
yeah, I mean, you're in a pretty cool situation. I feel like, you found people through stand-up. Obviously you have your YouTube channel, which everybody loves. So, like, what was the thing that really propelled you? Was it America's Got Talent? What was the thing where you were like, okay, this goes from being a hobby to doing it for a living?
Yeah, I guess it was, this was back in 2000, like I did America's Got Talent in 2015. So that was like at the end of when people could have a break. I don't even know if people say breaks anymore. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like having actual time off and not feeling the need to continue.
I don't mean like that. Like, you know when like you watch like an interview and it's like, I don't know, it's like Julie Louis-Dreyfus and she's like, that was my big break. Like, that's how I mean that.
Oh, I see what you say. I see. Yeah, I got you.
Not like break. Like the other one I've never ever taken. So that's ridiculous for you to even think that I would use that vernacular. But no, like break. Like when, you know, people are like, oh, but now people say like, I popped off or I had or I don't know what people say. I don't know what the kids know right now. But I do know that for me, America's Got Talent was, I guess, the thing that led to me being able to tour and do it full time. So since then, I think we're in such a cool time where people can like create their own opportunities. You know, like you do a ton of sketches and stand up on that you generate just like on your own. So, you know, that's kind of cool knowing that you and like so many other people can create opportunities for themselves. You know, it's becoming more and more favored for the creator friendly, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you make like you start off your new stand-up special with a sketch. And so, you know, you got that. Is that ever something you feel like you want to do on a more regular basis, or is that kind of like a big pain in the ass in your mind?
I don't know. It's funny. I was going to ask you the same thing because you like no one does like quality, like high produced, you know, like high produced stuff. Like your stuff is high produced. Like I've seen so many of your sketches where I was like, I was exhausted because I was like, I know that that's a location. That's a location. He had to get this. Like, yeah, there's props. Like, there's actors. Like, I'm like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
dude.
I know.
He's running a full on production company from his iPhone. Like, I can't. That's the thing is like, I'm not blowing smoke. Like, they're great sketches. I feel upset when I watch them because I know how much work you put in even before the work. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the work should be like I write it, here's a funny thing and let me put it out, but the work is buffering for itself. Like you have to put so much of effort before you even have to do work. So it's just it's wild, but I was doing sketches for like TikTok and for Instagram because like I love the format of writing very short stuff. Like I love like like script writing. Like, it's like stand up is fun, but writing like little scripts and you know, personifying characters and stuff, like that's loads of fun. But I have these like I have these ups and downs where I'm just like, today I feel like stand up and I hate sketches, and then the next day is like today I just want to edit something and I don't want to create something from the beginning at all. So I think that that's just turmoil and emotional instability on my part. I think
I'll say both our parts. I mean, I guess I feel the same way. I've got a team that helps me out quite a bit, so it's not, you know, all me just doing it. But it's do you find the pressure? Do you feel like there's always pressure that like, oh, I should be doing more, or are you like, oh, I'm thrilled with where I'm at? Like, how do you balance that?
Of course. And I was gonna ask you the same thing, so I want to hear what you say as well. But I mean the pressure, like I think it deprives you of your fullest creativity, but I also think it takes away from a lot of the joy of doing it. And I think it's very easy to lose sight of a lot of that. So I guess, you know, I was going to ask you, like, what's your, like, how do you feel? Like, you know, having a team is a big deal. I have I have people behind me as well who are in charge of certain things. But do you find yourself being like very much like I'm a control, you have to be in control fully, or mm-hmm. or you trust fully of what's going on? Or do you find like the pressure to create something, especially when you're working on the timeline of what's relevant or what, you know, always having your eyes open for how you can make something out of something that might not have been made if you didn't think about it? And that's the thing, to answer your question, that is something that is that's that pressure that we're talking about.
Yeah, I can tell by the way, you know, you're like rubbing your eyes, like, okay, just thinking about like makes your brain hurt. I do the same thing. But you said something in there, and this is a long way of me answering that question, but you said it kind of robs your joy of living in the moment, you know, or and that is where the most creativity happens. Like the number of times I'm like just out on my bike or whatever, and I've freed my mind of the stress and the bullshit. That's when I'm like, oh, that's like a multi-million view idea. Usually it's not, but you know, I've got that excitement and those creative juices going. And but today, for example, like I had a shoot today, and obviously we're doing the interview, and I had a couple other things. And I don't mean to say that like, oh, I'm so busy, but I think I'm just saying it in terms of like I was stressed today, and therefore I don't think I was my best in acting in the thing that I was acting in. And I don't think, you know, I'm maybe necessarily as on my game even in this interview as I, you know, could be, or I don't feel that way necessarily today, just generally. So it's like, how do you create enough space in your life while having all these demands of now I got to do TikTok and now Instagram Reels and now new YouTube Shorts. And these are all the things that are going to like make the motor going. But you have to like, it's so tempting to do it all and push yourself. But I think burnout is a huge thing. And then you're killing the motor. We think the motor is just making these things that get the views, that get the followers, that sell us tickets to our shows, you know, but the real motor is like having enough self-control, I think, to find the space to be even more creative. You know, and look how I tie that into work. You know, I don't even say it. You should do it. I should do it for myself. I'm like, no, I should do it to make better content, you know, to sell more tickets, you know? So I got some issues.
You're corrupt.
I know.
No, what? It's the way it is. It's the way it is. It's not, it's the way I think everybody is wired now. And in 2019, I'm so thankful. I don't know. It's not a popular thing to say, but I'm so thankful for the pandemic. Like that could not have come at a better time for me, because I was doing sketches like sketches and stand up twice a week. And I was writing an animated show and trying to produce a TV show. And I was on the road and my schedule was like getting back into LA on Monday and then leaving Wednesday for shows Thursday through Sunday. So it doesn't, I was never going to say no to anything. I was just going to continue to pile it all on and just like lie to myself that I would be able to, I had the bandwidth, I was equipped to take on all of that. And and then when it catches up with you, like it did in 2020 and like it did right now, I'm just so upset with myself that I didn't have, that I wasn't more firm with my limits, you know, because you kind of think that you're impervious to it or that you can't be burnt out. And, ultimately, you know, someone said to me, like, I think there's so many things, like there's podcasting, there's stand up, there's television writing, there's sketches, there's whatever, okay, you dancing on TikTok, who cares, whatever any of the things are. Mm-hmm. Find like two or three that if you can, that you like love or gravitate towards, and then do those and be the best at those things. But to do all the stuff, like, I mean, it is possible, but you, at the end, you can sacrifice a lot of quality in what you're doing if your heart's not fully in what you're doing. Because you're talking about the motor that like drives it. The only thing that it could stem from is not necessarily your willpower or your brain telling you like, I have to do this and this is what I have to do. It's like, it's got to be like your love for it. It has to be your heart that's saying like, that's what I care enough about that I'm going to work that hard. So I've had the order wrong for so long.
Yeah. And it's like, you get it right again. And I agree with you with the pandemic was happening. I was like ending like kind of one tour, about to start like the next tour with like a new name. And I had like, I was testing out all my new material in the middle of my career. I didn't have a show, basically, you know, I had nothing. So it came around at a great time for me to just also take that time to do something to write. But what is it? What is it about that mentality that we have? Like, you're from the Midwest, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think the Midwest has something to do with it?
I don't know. You're the first person who's ever asked me that. I don't know, because I don't know if you experienced this with your family. My family, they're not like, I love them, but they're not like creative. Like they call me an artsy type, you know, like they're that.
Well, you know, look, if you're sitting there wearing that sweatshirt around Thanksgiving, they're like, you know, what's wrong with the little, did you cut that off yourself? What in the hell happened to that? Did you buy it that way? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I love my family. I don't like it when they come to shows. I think a lot of the things that I have are pretty moderate ideas on the scale of the world, but they're pretty radical when you bring them to Indiana or any, you know, like it's hard to say that this is who I am to where you're from, because as a lot of areas in these states are very progressive and like open and forward thinking, sometimes you have like, you like my, like there's a few uncles of mine who they're just like, they'll sit through a show of mine or they'll watch like a sketch and they're still watching it because they support me, but they wouldn't watch it otherwise,
right?
So if there's something about like a Midwest work ethic, I definitely think that exists. But I, you know, it's really, you know, it's really hard. It also could just be because, you know, my family was always, you know, work hard and put your mind to doing something. It's just my thing happened to be whatever all the other stuff was that theirs wasn't. I never really fit in with my family.
That's such a profound phrase. It's hard to say who you are to where you're from. That's what you said, right? Didn't you say that? You said that. That's a freaking Instagram quote with like a picture of a home and like some like LA city lights behind it. You know, that's like some sad boy emo music shit.
It's good, I didn't though. Mean for that. But,
no, you already said it. That came right directly from your self-conscious. See, this is how good of an interviewer I am. I get you off your heels, and now your self-conscious just starts writing shitty poetry for the next 20 years of Instagram addicts. That's good. That's good. So your folks did what again?
I don't really know what my dad does. He's like a parts manager. It's air conditioning or parts, or I feel like something with parts. I feel like dads are always like, yeah, I sell parts.
Like, that's such a Midwest thing too, to be like, I don't know what in the hell he does. He sells parts of stuff and he's things.
He's got a region. He's a regional distribution corporation. Oh, it ends with like the shun. So it's like the information distribution parts regional corporate, you know, it's something. It's whatever. I've seen his business card, but I don't know what he does.
If we cut right now to your dad talking to his buddies at the bar, so what does your son do? Yeah, he's an upstand, Mike. I've seen a stool on stage with him. I don't know.
He does stories. There's this stories. What stories? He fleets. That's so funny. No, that's great. What a great perspective. Yeah, it's I 1000%. He probably couldn't describe what I do either. But I don't know. I mean, my family, like, I don't know. How's your family? Like, how do they feel about like what you do?
Well, I think, you know, I was doing, because you were doing acting out there for a while. You were yeah. doing like the normal way people go about doing acting, where you try and get an agent. I never really got an agent. I never got to that part. But you do all these terrible auditions for commercials that you're in the car for 45 minutes to spend 2 minutes screwing up an audition, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
When I was doing that, not making any money and just doing like all kinds of side jobs just to, you know, make some, I don't know, confused, I think. But then once I started doing stand up and it was very Wisconsin based, it was all stuff they really understood. So I think that really helps solidify it. But if I were doing, you know, the club stuff, like what I was doing before this whole thing took off, even then, they, you know, I don't think they would have been able to say, oh, he's a comedian or whatever, because I wasn't. I was doing a million different things, you know.
So then what was the thing that eventually clicked for you in terms of a brand or a through line, something that like was like a breakthrough? Oh my God, was I gonna say break? Was I literally about to say,
what made you pop off?
You know? What made you pop it off, dude?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, for me, it was, I was at the Comedy Store doing, like, you know, I was doing a bringer show up there in the belly room. Paid for everybody's ticket, I remember.
Yeah.
I bought them all. I gave them all for free. Could still only get half to show up, you know? I guess the parking's too expensive on Sunset, but yeah. So that's fun. I was doing that bit and I was doing this, I was in news and I was doing like, if all the stuff people said to me in news I was doing wrong, I just doubled down on them. That became the basis for this Manitowoc Man character. And then really when that took off, then I was all of a sudden booking an hour. And I mean, I'm sure you had this too. You know, when your stuff popped off, they're like, hey, you got a following, you come headline this joint or whatever. And did you have an hour at that point?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I had been doing like colleges for a few years. So I wasn't really. Yeah. So I'd been. So I had my injury in 2011.
Oh, yeah. Explain that for everybody, by the way.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So So I, when I was out here, I was out here in 2010, right after high school, and I was out here to do acting, and I had the, like you said, like I, like, you know, I went about like having an agent and all that stuff, and like I'd always like I did theater growing up. I just loved it. I knew I was always going to be out here. And then I worked at a comedy club just to have like a night job. And then they had a softball team, and I got hit with a softball in the throat, and I had fallen and hit my head. I had a concussion from it, and I was in the hospital for a few days because I went to sleep on the concussion, and I had lost a lot of my motor skills, and like there's nerve damage like here and on the left side of my body that I like had to like rehabilitate. And so because nobody would hire me as an actor, I started to like talk about the injury as like whatever, self-deprecating, or just I needed it. Like at mm-hmm. that time I was like, dude, I need to be able to feel creative and try to take some kind of control over my life back, because I was like, there's no way this is my life. Like, it can't just be like that. It's just done with the first year of being here. So after doing that for a few years, I just kind of was making a lot of self-deprecating jokes about my stutter. And like, then I was doing like a lot of the scene in LA and a lot of colleges. And then I did AGT. And then after AGT, then it just kind of, you know, then it became on, it was on me to continue to generate like content and whatever happens after the show, because that initial thing is nice and it's good exposure, and that could be a way that people might find you. But to maintain that and still bring that same work ethic to other projects that you want to pursue, you know, you don't want to just be seen as like that one thing. You want to be multifaceted, or a person that has depth or worthy of contributing something after that's done. So yep. You know, my big challenge has been my big challenge has just been in my own head, just being concerned with how people are perceiving me, or how people are might say one thing or something else. I used to be so frustrated with, you know, people wondering why I am stuttering or why I'm not. And I always want people to, you know, care about the things that I'm saying, despite having it or not. And I've worked a ton like on it, and loads of speech therapy and loads of like rehab and physical therapy and everything to try and just feel like alive, like as a person. And like, again, like it's ironic, just because I got into stand-up because I had felt stuck, and now after doing it for so long and having this issue and my whole body shaped by my own, you know, again, projections, like I have to, like, you have to redefine it or break it up so you can redefine it again. So
yeah,
that's kind of, and interestingly, that was kind of like what the perspective from the pandemic had kind of given me, is just like, you know, all this shit doesn't matter. If you're not doing something that's worthwhile, then the perspective that the world is ending could maybe give you would maybe change the way or what you're saying, like the way you're saying things on stage, or what you want to be saying with your art anyway. So
yeah. I just want to back up. So you have your injury. You're working at a comedy club.
Yeah.
Were you doing stand up at all at that point?
I had done like an open mic, but I was so bad, dude. Like I had so many comics just say like, dude, don't do that. Like, just,
really? Where was this club? What club was this?
I worked at Flappers Comedy Club.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. They opened like maybe the same year that I moved out there. So it was kind of perfect. Like I was mm-hmm. just like, I found it, and it was like, it was a night job. I was like, I can have my days free to audition or do shoots or whatever. And then I went on stage, and again, like, you know, stand up usually is very, the approach at least is very different than anything acting wise, because you know, with acting, you can have the, like, you could do a character or stage presence, but the idea is that, you know, it's Yeah, you're doing like a character. You're doing something that's not you. And stand up is a lot about what is you and what is your insecurities and what is it about you that is able to that an audience is able to relate to. And that was something that I struggled like immensely with the one time or two times I did an open mic. So I kind of just knew that it was always something I was going to admire from afar, like, stand up, I can have my appreciation for that. Other people do it, but it's not really my thing. And then after the injury, then that was when it was like, oh shit, like, that's kind of your only option, because it is very singular in its art form, and you're in full control of all of it. So,
yeah, that's what, first of all, props to you for sucking at stand up to the point where people were telling you, this isn't for you. And then, you know, and now I'm sure you have this other insecurity with you, you know, with your stutter and everything initially. Yep. And you just combine these two probably massive insecurities in the, like, did you think about it? Like, did that terrify you when you were doing stand up afterwards, or not as much?
Well, first of all, massive insecurity is the name for my penis.
It's a good name. Is that tattooed somewhere good. Around there, or no?
You don't know. Is it medium? Is it?
Yeah, it depends who you're asking.
It's massive insecurity.
Wait, are you saying mass of now? I was. Are you mass
no,
of
no, insecurity? No. Massive. Insecurity.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you saying? Are you saying mastiff like a dog?
No,
like
I was no. That's another bit. But Matt, we could do a whole rap. We could do a whole bar on just this massive insecurity, mass of insecurity, mastiff. I don't even know what the dog
so
is,
much.
But you get.
but no, it's pretty small. But yeah, so I forget your question.
You combined what were probably two insecurities in your life there. And most of the time, if someone's insecure about one thing, they're not going to, like, you know, double it up with something else.
Yeah.
You know, but you decided to do that. I mean, is that fair to say, too, that the stutter was an insecurity?
Oh, yeah. I was like, first of all, terrified. Like, I was so terrified to go on stage with it, just because I thought that the unpredictability of it is sometimes something that's so scary. Like, now I have so much control over it. Sometimes I'm able to, like, circumvent a word. Like, if I see a word that I know is going to give me trouble, like, I'll try to, like, use a different word. I've got a very, very extensive vocabulary just based on my inability to say certain things. But I think that I didn't really see it as like, I didn't see it as like a plan. Like, I wasn't like, I'm going to combine these two insecurities. I just kind of saw it as like, it really feels like my only option. And when you're self-deprecating, I think that it can be, it can be very disarming when you're that self-aware. And I feel like, I think sometimes I struggled with my ego when I was younger. And when you have something that's that humbling that happens to you, it's really kind of forcing you to deal with your issues. It almost opened the door for all these other things. Like, it's like, all right, so deal with this, you know, deal with the fact that, you know, like it became kind of therapeutic, at least at that time, when you have a very physical, like, apparent thing, you might as well try to address, like, a lot of the other things too. And sometimes it can be very funny, sometimes it can be very painful, and you ideally want it to be both.
What kind of a guy were you, like, as an actor in LA, like back then? What were you, like, the dude who just got out, he was a theater kid, he's gonna crush this town? Did you have that kind of confidence?
I did. You really have, like, you really just have, like, just unlimited energy, you know. You're just kind of you know, and you meet so many people who, when you first get there, they're just like, slow down. Like, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And you're just, it's like you're impenetrable. Like you just kind of, that doesn't matter. And I had had some solid like auditions and some callbacks. I had some shoots scheduled and I was on good rapport with certain casting. I had had a manager who set me up with like an agent, and it was all like coming. It was 10 years ago this month, like coming up on like October, like whatever, like 10th or 13th or some shit, was that Sunday that I had the accident. And I had like a shoot for Eagle Heart, and like I had like a Mad Men callback and like Disney and all kinds. And I also looked super young, so going in for stuff that was super young, like it was just, you know, it was just such a time where you kind of have the wind behind you, so nothing really can stop you unless it's a fucking line drive to the face, bro. Then that'll do it. But yeah, I don't know. I was confident, and I never really had something that made me second guess, and now that's almost all I do.
Well, through the accident and your recovery through that, like what'd you learn about yourself that you feel like you wouldn't have learned if you kept down that track of being a great actor or whatever?
I just learned that I think it's just humility. I think it's just empathy to a different degree, where you're actually understanding that there can be things that are crippling to people that you are not aware that are going on. There's things that could be, people could be like financially unable, you know, they could be, it could be mental, or it could be all psychological, or you have no idea what is somebody's thing. And I just felt like I wasn't able to really empathize for that for other people. And in that way, it made that much more sense that something like that would happen to me, because again, here's this obstacle that is so blatant that you have to deal with it. You have to address it. And I mean, I do know that that lesson then was something that was very important. And then as you get older and you start to add more onto your plate, or maybe start to want more, you got to be careful that whole thing doesn't happen all over again. Mm-hmm. You know, that like, you know, that you're not blowing off other things that matter for your own kind of selfish fulfillment. And that's really hard. That's really, when you're talking about what you're saying, where the only way our brains are wired is to be like, okay, I want to make sure that this thing is great, so let's make sure that I have enough time and space to be present in this moment, so it's also still great. Like it's right. still for it's yeah. still to for a product to that can be put into a physical world where it is represented with numbers or status or whatever. It's something that could be measured. And why that's so difficult to deal with sometimes is because you get wrapped up in something that is so cyclical, and when you see it succeed, you want to recreate it, that it is almost sucking out you as a person. It can get that way where you're not really experiencing anything anymore. You're just kind of, you are, it's almost like you're a stand-in for the experience, so you can watch it be happening and then use it to create your machine for your work, no longer like a person living your life. And I think there's a balance somewhere in between those two extremes, but navigating it right now has been my challenge for, you know, this Drew, like, you know, 10 years ago, 10 years from now, 10 years later.
Yeah. 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 I mean, you talk about those waves, like you're talking about like career goes up, video views go up, your stand-up special is out and hot. And then it's, you feel like when it's on its way down, you feel like you're going to lose everything. Like that was the best it got, you know, is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, 1,000%. I mean, it's and then the risks that you'll take for not seeing a friend or not, you know, not making a phone call to a person, like to a person who matters, or to be spending time that you wouldn't otherwise, because your expectation that you've put on yourself for whatever your work is or your video or your whatever and how it's performing becomes sometimes more important. So it's like, here I am with an issue of priorities again. But maybe on a, I don't know if it's a bigger scale, but one that's certainly different. And when you're talking about, you know, you mentioned, like you just said, like, you know, like you just said about how videos, you know, wanting to kind of like recreate that, it is hard to separate like the personal from the professional when you are the thing that is at the center of your business.
Right. Yeah. Well, and in your case too, you know, your comedy, and I think what sort of you've represented for, you know, maybe someone who is outside, you know, talks different than certain people do or whatever. And the amount of, and, you know, just doing some research, it's pretty easy to see this, the amount of hope that you've given people who do have a difference like that is incredible. And that, in my sense, looking at you, that's like, you know, a core of what you're doing is sort of equalizing people. And so what I'm trying to say is the undertones of what you're doing are so positive. Do you ever feel like you need to keep doing this because what you're doing is serving so many people that it's not selfish? Do you feel that? And yet, do you think your selfishness creeps into that at all?
Yeah. I mean, that's such a great question. I mean, it's like I used to kind of refer to a formula because I feel like quantitative data is the only one that you can really trust. So I used to almost write jokes like one for me, one for them. Like one thing I want to say that I actually feel and that I don't think should be inhibited by whatever other people might feel about it. And then the other one is like, okay, this one might, I hate the word pandering, but it's one that I am fully aware it could be a little broader, a little has a little more general appeal for something. And oftentimes the things that fall in that category are, you know, maybe jokes that I'll make at my own expense or about my struggles. But then, you know, then I go back to the other where it's like, but this is something that I want to say that maybe has an impact for something else, like something that, you know, that isn't just like, you know, like something that's silly or always at my expense. So when you start to, I think, believe some of the things that you're joking about in a way that can be negatively impacting your own well-being, then that's when I think you have to hold yourself accountable for making sure that doesn't get lost. Because if you are not, like, regardless of the fact that people might get something out of someone's comedy, if that person or whatever the artist, if that artist is losing themselves at the same time, then you have to find a way to reconstruct that or recalibrate so your relationship to what you're doing is still positive for both parties.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think your stuff's a great mix about talking about what people see or what they know about you with the stutter. And then, your comedy is just hilarious. It's hilarious on its own. Your special's great and everything. So, I mean, and that's tough to do. It's tough to get past. I mean, that's the first thing when you're first doing like open mic stuff is like all your first jokes are about what people are looking at. You know, those are the easiest ones to do. Get them out of the way. But then how do you not let a bit that always works kind of define who you are as a comedian? You know, it's a tough thing to do.
And And when you have, like, I'm sure you have this as well, where people will reach out and they'll be like, hey, like I was not feeling so great, and then I found your videos and I feel worse. No, when I found your videos, those are my messages. And then they're like, I found your videos and they helped me. And it, you know, as specific or vague as those messages are, you kind of have to just believe. I've almost gone past believing that that's real anymore, which is crazy. And that's not me being, unaware, or I'm above anything. It's just I used to feel, when you used to get, like, if someone would say that, or if they would say that after a show or in a message, you're just like, that's amazing. And now I'm still feeling like that's amazing, but I still just have no idea that could still be making an impact. Because when you're first doing it, you're just like, this is what I do. And I guess the byproduct of that is that people are getting something positive from it for them. That's amazing. So you don't really see it that way. Because initially for me, it was just like, I got to get out of this headspace and I got to find a way that I can survive and creatively try to get out of this. But then, you know, now I'll get messages and I'm still just like, how do you still believe in me? It's crazy. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I have imposter syndrome so bad.
I do too.
Do you really? Yeah. It's hard. That's such a hard thing to say to someone, because to someone who doesn't have it, you just look like an asshole, because what you're basically saying is, if you're doing, you can't say to like a show or a sold out room of people, you're just like, hey, like, you guys fucked up. You shouldn't have done this, because I'm not worth what you've done. Mm-hmm. But you know, that might appear like to some people that you're ungrateful, but it's just a mental thing. Like, I don't know how I can retrain myself to actually believe that I'm worthy of the things that I get to do or what I can do. So, you know, I know that was so winded, but
no,
it's just such a crazy thing that's very, very hard to try to explain to somebody who doesn't deal with it.
Yeah, no, I got that too. And I think the way I kind of deal with it is just by working harder or working more, you know.
Yeah.
And that perpetuates the same thing we've been talking about in this.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, so I saw in a different interview you did, you were saying that when you had your injury, you got dropped by your agent.
Yeah.
Is that true? So now did that agent come back to you?
No, actually, it's funny. That agency is no longer an agency, I heard. I think they
serves them right, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I shut down a whole agency. No, they're no longer. Someone told me that they're no longer an agency. But
okay.
And it wasn't like they were blatant. It wasn't like they were just like, you're broken, you're done. But they were just like, you know, come back when this is all sorted out. And it was
so basically they said that. That's almost worse. That,
which is almost worse. Yeah.
Oh, jeez Louise, ladies and gentlemen, how in the heck are you? Excuse the interruption. We just gotta thank some of our amazing sponsors here. And folks, we don't just take any sponsor here at the Cripescast, okay? You wouldn't have any idea how many people approach us about, you know, doing an ad for body waxing. Okay, but we say no. We turn down that money because we just want to promote, you know, the places that I know and love. Okay, and one of them places is Jolly Good Soda, okay? Now, you might not be able to wax your what have yous with Jolly Good Soda, but I tell you what, it makes your soul a lot happier, okay? You pour yourself a Jolly Good floater on your old fashioned. I like to go Sour Power, because I like to live on the wild side. It's just a fantastic soda, and you can buy it at jollygoodsoda.com. They also got some Jolly Good candles. So if you want, you know, your bathroom
smelling like a Jolly Good instead of whatever else you just put in there that possibly made you feel Jolly Good, but it don't smell Jolly Good, you light up one of them candles and you keep her moving. And also, folks, I want to mention Duluth Trading Company. The most fantastic clothes in all the Midwest. I wear Duluth Trading Company every day. I got some of their sweats on right now, okay, and they're nice. I wear them to the gym. I wear them to bed. I'm not a very hygienic individual, but that don't matter because the clothes are very comfortable. Duluth Trading Company, it's made for a functional life. And might I say, it's also very fashionable. Check them out at DuluthTrading.com. And finally, folks, if you're looking for Man to Walk Minute merch, I'm talking stuff that says keep her moving, or watch out for deer, or ope, or go Packers, and you know what, the Bears. Check us out on ManToWalkMinute.com or CripesCast.com. Just click on the merch section. You can also get us at your nearest Fleet Farm. Okay, also we got hats and koozies, cribbage boards, the whole nine. And of course, the Midwest Survival Guide is up there too. So get your Christmas shopping done early. Head on over to CripesCast.com and keep her moving. Hey, speaking of the CripesCast, let's get back to it right now.
And oh, and actually, this is a question I had for you. Yeah. So being a, I mean, you're, I think your comedy is like, it's very easy to like. And
I think
with the sensitivity of the climate with anything, regardless of comedy or whatever the art is, is that something that you're aware of? Is that something that, like, when you're recording or you're writing a thing, I'm a nice person and I always consider everybody's feelings and how someone could perceive something when I am saying it. However, in the moment where, when you are doing something that should be within the freedom of that moment, it is very hard to get the satisfaction of knowing that you're kind of bowling with no, but you got the training wheels off, you're bowling with no bumpers, whatever the metaphor is, but yeah. You feel like you're not like you're unencumbered by whatever. So it's just like, I'm almost like, I have like three or four filters on at all times, not just because of what I'm saying, but also because of the way I'm aware of how I'm like, how my voice sounds, like how I'm coming across, like, what am I saying? Like, and then I'm sometimes get lost in what I was even trying to say to begin with. Does that ever happen?
Yeah, it does. I mean, when you're talking about those filters, because I think especially these days, you know, you don't want to, especially as a white guy these days, you know, you want to think about your perception of the world is one thing. And the amount of, like, I don't know, learning about how my life perception growing up is a lot more complicated than, you know, I ever gave it credit for. Yeah, I'm always thinking about, I don't want to say the wrong thing. But yeah, you're trying to be as good as you can be on that regard, and then also be entertaining. And also, and you're talking about, like, in this scenario, or like on stage or something, right? Or are you saying writing as well?
Exactly. You'll be like you're recording a podcast and you'll be saying something, and then it's almost like when you say a word enough times, like, it starts to sound weird. It's kind of like that. It's like when you're saying something, like, I used to do a podcast every week, and I've got just a great studio for it, and I used to have a great studio, but now I just have like a side room with like colorful fucking panels.
Psychedelic checkers.
Psychedelic checkers, dude.
Yeah.
And I found myself so many times in the podcast, I would have to edit out, like, I would have to actually edit out nothing in the podcast other than me saying, like, is that okay? Like, is that fine? And then, like, my assistant would be in the room, or my fiance would be like, yeah, that's fine. And then I'd be like, okay, yeah, no, like, yeah, all right, of course, it's just silly or whatever. And then it would be hard to, like, get back into what I was saying, you know, like, something as silly as, like, I was making jokes about I was making jokes about like polar bears, and I would like read like animal facts on like my podcast. And it's just like, there's something so weird about the comedy filter that comes on when you're doing anything, because it's not like I'm inherently anything bad, but you just have to be extra, extra cautious when you are trying to work on something for whatever the first time is, especially if it's the first draft of something. You have no idea. So,
right. And I think that's I was talking to Mark Norman about this, and he was talking about like a tweet that he had made that, like, you know, it was like a complicated tweet. It had to do with, you know, some sort of social issue. And it wasn't that great. And he's like, yeah. And then I took all this crap about it. And he's like, well, it was a first draft. You know, what do you want from me? But I think, like, we're kind of in this business now of putting so many of our first drafts, just publishing them weekly, you know, whether it be podcasts or tweeting or whatever. And, you know, that again, it's that whole thing we perceive as the motor. You're trying to keep it happy. And it's kind of like the news. Like, do you want to be first or do you want to be right? That mentality of like, we got to get it out, got to get it out. I think sometimes we do that as comedians, you know, I've been like, I've done podcasts where I'm listening back and I'm doing the same thing you're doing, talking to people like, could that be offensive? Like, I was kidding, you know, but then you overthink it, you know? And so if anything, I'd rather lean more toward that than toward like, and that's just my brand of stuff.
Of course,
You know, I'm a Midwest guy, you know, I just want everyone to be happy, you know, taken care of. Jeez. But, you know, I also realize I've said a bunch of stupid stuff where it's like, oh man, I'm really not as smart or like, into that I thought. I have some weird thoughts, you know?
Yeah, same. And they should never be said, but like just weird things that like, it's like weird things like they should never, like, you know, like things that aren't offensive to anybody. They're just weird things. Like it's just like, sometimes you just have this urge to be like, I should like, as a person, I should just talk about, like, I want to talk about Britney versus Spears. And then people are like, why the fuck don't I hear that from you? And I'm like, yeah, no, you're right. I shouldn't be talking about that. But like,
it sounds like that person at the beginning of your stand-up special is just always like in your head, you know?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
But yeah, it's I don't know if you want to call it the devil and the angel, but it's just all the filters, as you call it, or the voices of like constantly informing what's just kind of being kept in your mouth. One of those things. What's your favorite spot in the Midwest, being a Midwest guy?
It's funny that like I actually love Wisconsin crowds. Like I like the Northeast. Like Illinois has always been really great crowds. Indiana's, I mean, I'm from there, but they're okay. But like, it, like Ohio crowds are great. Wisconsin crowds are great. Like I love comedy on state. Milwaukee's so much fun. I did, obviously Madison's, there I've done, I did Bricktown, or not Bricktown, Appleton. Appleton's a cool
Skyline.
Cool Skyline. Yeah. It's cool. Like those are great spots, you know, in the Midwest. Like Minnesota is also like, they are really nice. I've done the Mall of America there. But yeah, like in general, what I really love about the Midwest is how supportive of audiences they are. Truly. Like it's not just like they're enthusiastic in the shows. It's like they're there to buy like merch. They're there to like say hi. They're there to tell you, like, to see you again in a neighboring area. Like they'll drive, you know, like that's just, it's just really been so consistent that region.
Yeah, it is. There a lot are drinking a lot too. That helps with the merch sales.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that helps with merch sales. Yeah,
yeah, that's how you really get that going. And of course, there are the heartwarming folks who will bring you casserole and whatnot. But a lot of times they're getting hammered and buying all your koozies.
So. Yeah, and the drinking helps with their decision to go see you tomorrow too.
They're yeah,
right. that's something they decide that night as well.
Right,
they're like, let's drive to fucking, let's drive to Kentucky. It'll be good.
Yeah. I love it. In doing your, I know we're wrapping up here, so I know you probably gotta go. But in doing your stand-up special, you decided to release it on YouTube. What was the strategy in that? Did you try selling it before to like Netflix or something like that? Or did you just say, this is the way I'm doing it?
Well, there's been a few friends of mine who've put it out themselves. And, that's something that I was attracted to that idea. At first, I wanted to, I had an interest from a few different places. But I knew that if I released it on my own, where I already had there was already an audience, there's kind of already it's already kind of built in. Like, I've had people supporting me on YouTube for years. So, and people asking, it's great that you have crowd work clips, but I want to see material. And I just feel like that's a great place for it to live if I am in control of it one way or the other. So if it doesn't succeed, that's on me. And if it does, that's also on me. So there's something that's very, I think, fair about releasing something on your own and seeing how it does. And Netflix is they wanted to produce something that was going to be shot either a year from now or a little bit after that. And I was like, well, this material is pretty relevant to stuff that I'm not going to write or perform something like that for something that was, unless we get so many more waves of this, then, and it just continues to stay relevant. That's the ideal. But I like the idea of just being like, here's this, here it's free. And thank you for supporting me for however long. So
yeah. And you built that audience predominantly with your vlogs, right?
Vlogs, but also through stand up. Like, I was doing vlogs for a few years, and then, like with anything, my heart just wasn't really in it anymore. Like, I was just like, this could be something. Could that be something? And then I'm just like, what am I talking about? Who cares? Like, why do you want to taste test peanut butters? No one cares about that. But you're just like, no, it could be. And you're just like, what?
That's the mentality. I could do this work. I could do a podcast. Yeah.
I could write a book.
Yeah.
I could make this work. And people are like, no one gives a shit about that. And then when the quality of whatever you're doing again is suffering, then you kind of have to call it. So I feel like making that transition over to doing more stand-up made me happier, because that's the thing I am passionate about. I want people to know that, not so much like, hey guys, go ahead and smash that like button. And I could do that, but that's not who I am. So.
All the stuff we've talked about career-wise or whatever, what's your best advice to yourself 5 years ago?
Oh, shit. 5 years ago?
Or 10. I don't know. Pick the age. You get it. Dude. Your past self talking to your future self.
So, I'm me talking to them?
No, you're you talking to you. Very, very trippy. Yes.
No, I'm me talking to me, but am I me from then talking to future me, or am I me now?
Oh, yeah. You are future you talking to past you.
Okay, gotcha. Jesus, man. I don't know if I should answer. I don't know if I give this a funny answer or a real answer.
You can give it both. Whatever, tickles your brain cells. That's a weird phrase to say,
I think that's a funny thing to say. I think I would say just... Just do what you do, like do what you want to do, not what you think should be done. Like if you start thinking about it, like yes, you can have strategy, but if you start to get too like, well, I could do this because that could get me to something, but I will end up not enjoying it along the way, then I would say just don't do that. And that mostly is just deeply seated in trusting yourself and trusting your brand, trusting your abilities, and that you're going to be okay. You don't need to make sacrifices that you don't want to make. If you, again, like we talked about so many times in this, if you're going to get lost or burnt out doing it. So yeah, that would probably be my advice.
Nice. Anything I didn't bring up in this thing that you're like, you know, if I were doing this interview, I would have asked this, you know?
I might have put you against the ring by saying like I might put you against the ropes by being like, I've done several podcasts. And it's not even like I've been interviewed badly. It's just, I know I ask a lot of questions, and yeah, because I am genuinely curious to know. It's not, yeah, like I, you know, and that I think is what, you know, if you're genuine in what you want to ask, I think that is also what makes for, that's what can make for a really like connected episode. But it isn't as effusive as I might have had it. I just think if I were to host a podcast, it would go hours and hours because I'm curious to know. I love to learn things. I love to learn things about people and how things, like their trajectories and stuff. So you're a phenomenal podcast.
Thank you.
I was more speaking to why I am able to ask such ridiculous questions and how that can, I like the control of listening to what other people are saying so I can learn rather than feeling like the attention is on me for whatever this stuff. But
do you like how I made you explain all this just because it's my imposter syndrome that was triggered by you saying, I'm the real guy you should ask. So now I got the imposter sims triggered, and now you've got to explain that whole thing. So that whole explanation's your fault, okay? If you're pissed about it. Seriously, though, what did I not ask it?
No,
and I'm not saying like I asked that to other people too. So it's not like I'm just asking this to you.
No, everything was so covered. It was great.
Are you a Colts fan?
I am a Colts fan. Are you a Packers fan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is Aaron and Adams, are they both gone next year, do you think?
I don't know. I don't know. You know what? Super Bowl. We're winning the Super Bowl and then we'll think about it. How's that
feel? All right. Yeah, I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the Colts are not winning it, but I'm just I want that for Aaron for sure. Mm-hmm.
Sure. You don't want that for the Packers, though. You want that.
I don't.
Okay.
You know, this is come to the Colts.
This, by the way, season projections. Or are you saying we're not, and me saying we are? That's the difference between Colts fans and Packers fans, I think. And we haven't won the Super Bowl in 11 years now, so it's not like, I mean, you might have won a Super Bowl before us. When was the last time the Colts won a Super Bowl?
I don't know, 2005, I think.
Oh, okay, never mind, we got you.
Yeah, I think you guys are after that. But yeah, I will say I saw the Packers game when they came to the Colts towards the end of the season last season.
Oh, you went to it?
Yeah, I went to it.
Nice.
And yeah, there were so many Packers fans. Yeah. Oh my God. I mean, what a franchise.
We travel. We travel.
You guys don't have shit to do.
That's not true. That's false. We're all owners of the team. So we have to be there. Okay. That $250 gets you the ability to pay 500 bucks to travel, see a game. So stop laughing like that. I no longer think you're laughing with me. I feel like this is, you're just laughing at me, and I can tell the difference, okay?
We're, bro, that is so true.
God, yeah, it is so true. We got ownership in that thing.
But yeah, like, man, it was that was an amazing game. And but yeah, Adams is great. Rodgers is great.
Packers are great.
Do you guys have, is it Zadarius? That's it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's great. And then you got Lazard. That dude's like everywhere. Like, bro, I was like, will someone cover that guy, please? Like, no one, like, well, first of all, Adams is always able to get open, but Lazard is just like that other target where it's just like, you got to cover both, dude. Like, that guy's, he's great. Is he wide receiver or is he tight end?
Tight end.
Yeah.
But, you know, how's your quarterback? Now I know nothing about the Colts. This is me trying to talk Colts to you. How's your quarterback this year? Is he okay?
What are your colors? Blue and red?
You're the orange one, right? With nothing on your helmet? Your fans got the bags over their heads? Browns are looking good this year, though.
The Browns are looking good. But our quarterback is Carson Wentz.
I knew that.
Yeah, from the Eagles. And I don't know. It's wild. On the times when he is not injured, it feels like a lot of our other players are. And then when those players are not injured, then it feels like Carson gets injured. So it is very early in the season, so who even knows? But, every season is always a surprise. Whoever can end up, you know, you don't know until the very end who's gonna be good. So
yeah,
it's, other than the Cardinals right now, like no one else is, like everyone else is just kind of like, all right, we'll just wait and see how it unfolds.
Yeah, I know. After week one, when the entire NFC North was 0-1, I was like, okay, well, it's open for anyone. Yeah,
you guys should take the Bears for sure, but you guys beat the Steelers.
Beat the Steelers. We only lost to the Saints, and we beat the 49ers in that incredible comeback. Not sure if you saw the highlights, but you want to watch those tonight.
I did. I did watch that. That was great.
Yeah, that's what got you Jones to have Rodgers on your team next year.
Yeah, that's right. Well, no, everyone was talking like crazy, where they were like, no, Aaron's just he's intentionally taking the game. I was like, I don't think that's true. Like, I just think that's nonsense. So but it was a wild off season for you guys, for sure.
I know. Me doing what I do, they always ask my opinion. I was like, you know, I know absolutely 100% without a doubt what is gonna happen. And the answer to that question the answer to that question is, I don't know, you know, so, yeah, which is basically everything that ESPN and all those people were saying, you know,
could have been summed up in that.
Yeah, you just come out hot off the gate with energy talking about this and what I've seen over the, and then if you look over here, but at the end of the day, I don't have a gosh, no, there's nothing. All right, cool, man. Well, hey, this was a lot of fun. We went over a little bit. Sorry about that. But I appreciate it. It's cool. Maybe we can collab at some point in the near future.
Yeah, I would love to. That. I would love to be in one of your sketches, but so briefly where it's like not like where it's almost like a background where it's like, wait, was like that? Was that like, who could that?
I got like it. That. I got it. We'll put a mirror on a door. And in the sketch, we'll have it go, and you'll just be standing there holding a boom pole.
Like, yeah, that's good. Or that's like, good. I leave, and I've got like a shower towel on, and I'm like, stop. Oh, you're filming? Yeah.
Both of those would have very different reactions, I think.
I intend to do both.
Nice. Let's do it. Where you're in? Based out of LA, yeah.
I am based out of LA, but I visit Indy often, and I'm sure I have like Wisconsin somewhere on the books. Is that they still on the books?
I think that you can't say big break, but you can say on the books.
Okay, cool. So then I'll still stay on the books.
On the books. Yeah, that'd be cool. When you're in Wisconsin, let me know. I'm gonna be out in LA I think at some point in the next few months, so maybe we can collab there.
That would be great.
Sketch, you think would be fun?
I think so. Sweet. I think so. But I always prefer to collab when there's like sunshine and stuff. So if you come here, then
yeah, we can guarantee that. Yeah, it's gonna get pretty atrocious here pretty soon. So yeah. But that sounds great. I'll let you know. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, please do. Cool, buddy. Well, and I hope you don't feel too overwhelmed today. I know you have like such a busy schedule today. So
thanks, my man. And you too. I feel like we're kind of on the same wavelength with some of these burnout things. So hang in there and give me an hour if you ever want to just shoot the shit about it.
Yeah. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate that.
Cool, bro. All right, well, you have a good one.
You too, buddy.
Take care. All right, that is it for this week's episode of the KrebsCast. Make sure you follow Drew Lynch on Instagram. That's at the Drew Lynch. Check out his comedy special on YouTube. That's Drew Lynch, Concussed. Just put it in the old search bar. It'll pop right up. And also, you can follow the KrebsCast. That's at KrebsCast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And I want to thank you all for listening and for leaving a comment and for rating the podcast. It helps us a lot, and I really appreciate you. All right, everybody, keep her moving. Watch out for deer. And tell your folks I says hi. Bye-bye.
So roll out the barrel and get the band brewing. Life's got you down. Just keep her moving. It's on Wisconsin. The Badgers say it's the old Wisconsin Jubilee.
You know, sometimes when you're ice fishing, you put your foot into walleye hole and go ass over tea kettle and you think you're done. No, you gotta keep her moving.